football on off the ball.
I think they can go and win it. They're a very, very difficult team to beat. They don't lose an awful lot of games. I think Morocco are better than Germany. I think, and people have said to me they fancy Germany as dark horses. People have said they fancy Ecuador, or I personally fancy Colombia as a bit of a dark horse. I think Morocco are ahead of all those teams.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Paul McGinley on this week's Golf Weekly talking about Scotty Scheffler, and obviously he's the favourite at Shinnecock Hills. Nathan, good morning to you.
How are you?
Welcome back.
Good to be here.
How you doing?
I'm all right.
Excited about this?
Yeah, it's sort of crept up with World Cup madness, and usually major week is now the one week of the year where you get good golf coverage on the TV, because there's been such massive cutbacks to the TV coverage, where at least you get McGinley and Chambly late at night and you can sort of fully throw yourself into it. But obviously that's been distracted somewhat by
the World Cup.
The World Cup.
Even the Americans are into it. The American match had a higher rating than the Knicks final game against the Spurs, which is first time that's happened.
I suspect their next match will have higher ratings than the US Open.
Yeah, definitely.
The US Open might have higher ratings here, though, than some of the World Cup games, because of the timings. Timings work out great for us.
For golf,
the
US does,
Open.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the weirdest things whenever you go to America is the golf finishing in the middle of the day.
It's the perfect
sport for an Irish audience of Sunday night, Glenrow time. Actually, I can sit down at 9 o'clock and watch the last 2 hours of the golf. Perfect.
Ignore
calm
my family.
Yourself mentally ahead of the stresses that are to come over the next week.
But then you have to stay up until 4 a.m. watching, I don't know, Ghana take on.
We've had a good run of majors. Thankfully, there've been a lot of East Coast majors as of late, where you're not stuck till 4 a.m. Next year, I think it's back in Pebble Beach, so it'll be a nice 4 a.m. finish again.
Yeah, can't do those. Shinnecock is obviously New York, and it is a familiar territory for loads of people. Shinnecock is where Phil Mickelson played the rolling ball, which I see somebody making the point today. He was demonstrating a point as opposed to just being duplicitous.
Well, I think
same time.
Everything we've learned about Phil since would be that maybe
it was everything. It
Phil
was that too.
Been a petulant, you know what?
Okay.
So yes, they lost the course a little bit back in 2018 when Brooks Koepka won and he completed back to back U.S. Opens, and the fear and the big talking point probably over the next 24 hours in particular is going to be about the weather and the wind. And what happens?
Ender has some inside information. He has a man trackside for us.
Man on the ground, yeah. He's involved in the build-up of the tournament. So he goes and sets up some of the key aspects of the tournament when he's there. So he's been at Shinnecock Hills for the last year and a half, I believe. He said it's very, very windy. And he...
That's inside.
Very, very windy.
But Look at this. It's shocking.
I'm like, made from Donegal, went to Shinnecock. Yeah, I'll take a year and a half to build those grandstands, pal.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's not from Donegal, I say. He said it's very, very windy, but he also says there are some key players inside of the top five favourites that have been playing this course for more than a week at this stage.
John Rahm, been there, embedded.
And Patrick Reed as well.
Yeah.
Well, Patrick Reed is a strange one, and we spoke, I think, before the Masters of he had gone around the world.
Yeah,
and
really
he'd made
well.
Himself a European Tour player. And he hasn't played at all since. All he's played is the majors. So even though he could come back and could have played some of the European Tour events,
decided not to.
He decided actually, because he's guaranteed his card back next year, he's done enough.
Okay.
And has decided, obviously, to spend time actually just prepping properly. And he has such a brilliant short game, which is going to be crucial, you think, because everybody's going to end up in some amount of trouble. The question today is going to be how much golf they get played, and is it going to end up being unfair? So initially, when the weather forecast at the start of the week was developing, it looked as though the early starters would get the best of it. So including Rory and Scotty, who are out quite early, starting lunchtime Irish time, and that they'd get the sort of 20, 25 mile an hour gusts. And then it was going to get progressively worse and be unbelievably difficult for the afternoon starters. But the forecast has got worse, which means the likelihood is the afternoon starters won't get to go out in it. And the question will be, do you end up with maybe a couple of hours where the early starters are having to play in incredibly tough conditions?
Then nobody plays. The
then
weather
nobody
clears.
Plays. They come back tomorrow and it's all fine for everybody. Ooh. And you end up in 4 over after 8 or 6 over after 8. And that's where the unfairness comes into it. And that's where you'll see the frustration coming out with a lot of the top players, if they feel they've been screwed over.
Yeah, Rory was actually speaking about this in the press conference in the build-up to this. And basically, he was asked here, does he think that they're doing it the right way by letting the course build into itself across the week? But he brings up that point of maybe it's not fair how they're setting up the course.
Yeah, I think as the week goes on, you have the ability. I mean, you have the ability for the course to get firmer and faster. But I think with this golf course, only up until a certain point. We've seen what's happened here the last two US Opens. It doesn't need to get that fast to play incredibly difficult and challenging. I'd say the greens yesterday probably averaged about 11 and a half. They certainly don't need to be any faster than that. I think with the wind they're expecting on Thursday, I'd say, I mean, it seems like they probably want to get those greens back to the 10s, 10-5, something like that, just because of how heavy the wind is going to be, gusts of 35 to 40 miles an hour. It was only gusts of 25 to 30 yesterday, and balls weren't staying on the 11th green. So just that's where it's just, you know, just have to, you know, use a little bit of caution. But certainly, I think as well, Thursday, Friday is difficult because there's two waves, and you want to try to protect the competitive integrity of the tournament and try to make it somewhat fair for everyone. Obviously, it's an outdoor sport and you can't control everything. But I think on the weekend, starting times are, I don't know, 10 a.m. say is the first tee time. So at least they have time to, if they need to put a lot of water on the golf course early, and then they just let it sort of naturally dry out as the day goes on. You know, they have the ability to do that at the weekend, which I think makes life a little bit easier for them. So I think Thursday, Friday, they're just going to have to manage a little bit better.
So this is one of the great American golf courses, top five in the world golf course. So if it plays the way it can play and the wind doesn't wreck it, it can be a really brilliant major. But it's been an incredibly quirky golf course. So 654 players have played US Opens at Shinnecock. Three of them have finished the week under par.
Was Phil one of them?
Phil probably was when Retief Goosen won, because Goosen finished on 4 under.
And Brooks?
Brooks finished on 1 over.
Okay.
Now Brooks, so again, sometimes you think when the weather is a bit crazy, it is a leveler, but Brooks was the best player in the world in 2018. So you probably need a lot of confidence coming into this. So you're looking at guys who are in a good headspace, because everybody's, again, you could be 4 over after 6 and still win this golf tournament and still be totally in it. And you look back in 2018, like one of the real quirks of it was Daniel Berger and Tony Finau on the Saturday went out early and they'd watered the course and they shot 66s and they were, I think they were on 3 over par. They were about 50th when they walked off the course. But the course just got drier and drier and drier. And they were leading the tournament at the end of the day because it became so, so difficult on the back nine.
They're going to wet it. They're going to water it.
Yeah, so they're going to syringe it, which I like the idea of them literally going out into each little hole in the green. But it's just a light watering between the two rounds. But I think, as Rory said there, what they'll do is they'll water it right up until each group is coming through for the first time that day. And they'll hope that that'll keep it. Like the greens are going to be, I think he said 11. They're saying they're going to aim for 10, which would be like the slowest the greens have ever been at the US Open in all probably 30 or 40 years, because they know that's how they'll start the day, because they're just going to get faster and faster.
Yeah, Rory's been building up to this over the last couple of months as well. He played Shinnecock Hills a couple of, I'd say about a month ago, and he was talking about the speed then, and he was saying, I hope they slow down by the time the US Open rolls around. So it seems to be a big thing that he's probably leaning into this week. With the what you mentioned there with like the best player and the wind and the way the course is playing, is that why Scottie Scheffler is so far ahead in terms of the favourites for this? Because his form does not correlate with him being, I think he's half the odds of Rory McIlroy going into this. Like, why is he still such strong favourite? Is it just because he is the best player in the world and might be the one who can manage it best?
Yeah, and you say his form isn't great, and yes, compared to previous years, I'll take a quick look at the world golf rankings, and the most points won this year by any player is comfortably Scottie Scheffler. So he has been, even this year, the best player in the world, because there's been a real inconsistency amongst everybody. Like Rory's barely playing. So yeah, he's been going up to Shinnecock and he's been giving himself the best possible preparation for everywhere. But he's very, very lightly raced. He's, you know, he's struggling with his driver in the competitive rounds. Is he able to sort that out during the practice rounds and then be confident enough in it when it comes out? Like, Scotty's by far and away the best player in the world. The one question around Scotty is form not where it was over the last couple of years. And also that thing of you need to go easy on yourself this week. And Scotty hasn't been going easy on himself. And we saw what happened with Ted Scott, his caddy, a couple of weeks ago.
People missed it.
So Scotty stood up in a par three and he basically stuck it in the water. It was one of those, I think it was a Thursday night. It was sort of getting ready to go to bed around 10:15. And you're like, what? I had to rewind. I was like, sorry, what's happening here? So he sort of stopped and started just randomly ranting. And Ted Scott obviously walked off and he's like, I can't hear you. And then he just went for the next 10 minutes ranting about, I had a great shot. I couldn't have hit that any better. And basically it was the wind. So the pin position was over to the left of the green towards the water, but the wind was coming in off the right. And say Radar, who's there following him, was like, no, you got to be aiming 15 feet right of the pin here. He aimed it at the pin. And he didn't take account of the wind. And Scotty was obviously trying to pin the blame for that.
On the caddy.
Now, Radar was, both of them should have realised what was going on here. But it was just maybe the first crack we have seen from a Scotty Scheffler that reflected the old Scotty Scheffler and the Scotty Scheffler we've sort of heard about but never seen in public, which was that he does run very hot and he can get very, very intense and very hard on himself on the golf course. And that's why Ted Scott has got so much credit since he came in. I remember Ted Scott was Bubba Watson's caddy, and there used to be, back in the glory days of Twitter, a hashtag pray for Ted, because every time something would go wrong for Bubba, he would unleash on Ted. And when Ted took over with Scott, he sat him down and said, I'm not doing this unless you calm the hell down. So it's just been all a little bit off. Like, Scotty's game is, you hit it to 15 feet, you give yourself more birdie chances than everyone else, you take bogey out of the equation. If his putter is hot, he'll hold enough of them and he'll win the golf tournament. But everything has been really scrappy this year. And while he had that run of second place finishes after the Masters, they were sort of Rory-style backdoor second place finishes, yeah, where he's out of it on a Thursday and then he can let loose and play brilliantly over the 3 days.
So you don't think he's going to turn it around for this weekend?
I think I've sat here for the last two majors and said, Scott, he's going to win.
Yeah.
And he's going for the career Grand Slam this week. So this is his first attempt at the career Grand Slam. Listen, if you have to pick one player, you have to pick Scotty, because his level is so far above everybody else. And again, the type of conversations we're having about Scotty, much like Rory with the career Grand Slam, change completely if he does this, and the speed that he would have completed the career Grand Slam.
We have seen how it's been a millstone around players next, though.
And I think we've seen it be a millstone around Rory's neck. And I think if you go back to, say, 2015 and Rory's first attempt, it was a big thing, but it just grew and grew and grew because it's, well, why can't he do it? It must be just the weight of the career Grand Slam.
It also felt like it was a little bit down to Augusta and it being the Masters as opposed to the US Open.
And it's the first major of the year, so we always have 6 months to talk about it. And invariably during those 6 months, he'd go on a run at some stage. We're like, well, now he's got to do it.
And it's the same course every year. Mm. And it's like, oh, the hoodoo of the course as opposed to the hoodoo of the competition and the grand achievement. Not sure you can say that about US Opens. More like, oh, he can't deal with the rough, or he can't deal with the greens, or he can't deal with the weather that the US Open provides the challenge of for Scotty Scheffler. But I don't know if you can make that argument because he's so good everywhere else.
Yeah, I think Scotty, it will be, unless the conditions go against him, it would be a shock if he didn't finish inside the top five, top ten. And at some stage on Sunday, you're thinking, this guy has a chance. And if he's managed to figure out his irons and just tighten everything up a little bit, like, his putting hasn't been as good, but maybe that's because he's a bit frustrated with the rest of his game as well. But like, he's not far off, and as I say, he still has way more world ranking points than anybody else this year. And there's nobody, we've had it, you know, we had a Matt Fitzpatrick spell, and in fairness, Matt Fitzpatrick played well last week and he's won this before.
Right.
So maybe there's a sign there, but we had that spell from him. We had a spell from Cam Young where it looked like, okay, they're absolutely on fire. We'd Rory winning the Masters, but nobody's really.
Cam Young at the Masters, I thought, was going to have an incredible year afterwards.
So that, and he hasn't been able to follow up on that. So maybe there's enough good golf there they can go back to quite quickly, but it does feel this is just going to be a bit of a war of attrition and hanging in there. And again, if it wasn't for Liv and the lack of sightings of John Rahm with his short game, it'd been a Lynxy style course, you would think.
Well, what about our inside information that he's been there for a week?
Well, exactly. All those things are a positive for John Rahm. And Listen, maybe he's in a better headspace now that he knows he's probably going to be coming back at some stage.
Is he? What's actually happening? There's
well, nobody, no, nothing has changed. The only question now is, does Liv survive till the end of this season? Because there's still a cash injection needed from the PIF of sort of $500-600 million to fulfill the contracts that they have agreed to.
Well, you have to assume they're going to pony up.
Well, listen, I think all the assumptions we had about the Saudi money have changed dramatically in the last 6 months. So again, you're going, we've thrown so much bad money at this. Are we just going to throw another $500-600 million?
I mean, I'm sure that there are some lawyers somewhere getting paid a lot to try and find a way out. Where will he come back? They'll have the same grandfather rule back to allow him as a recent major winner back in, right?
I don't know whether they'll give Ram and DeChambeau the
Patrick
Koepka treatment. So Patrick Reed's deal wasn't the same as Koepka's. So Koepka took advantage of a one-time only offer where he was able to come back instantly, paid a €5 million fine / charity contribution to all of the players' charities. All the good stuff that we love about golf. And like what they could have done, and what Brian Rolapp, who heads the PGA, some people were recommending, was the day that it sort of became clear that Liv was completely screwed, come out and go, you've got until Friday to say you're coming back, and you can come back at the start of next season, no problem. Whereas now I wouldn't be surprised if they go, okay, you need to take 12 months. You go, you play the DP. They'll play the DP World Tour. They'll probably, you know, you're a bit quieter at the start of the season, but once you get to this time of the year, there's plenty of tournaments.
Yeah.
DeChambeau seems to be slightly different in that he seems to be trying to call their bluff, and that I'm
going
to
be a YouTuber,
bigger than the tour, and I'm happy to be a YouTuber. Now, you know, Bryson hasn't done anything this year, so we'll see how that goes for him.
I don't know if that's technically true, Nathan. He has hundreds of millions of views on YouTube. So
did he chip the ball over the house into the hole yet?
He did that. Yeah,
that was last year's thing, wasn't it? Yeah, he hasn't had a follow up to that.
He had a video up in classic DeChambeau, playing up to his audiences, throwing the ball into the rough to show us how deep it is. It's more wispy than deep.
Well, it's quite wispy, deep, and also about 60 yards to the right of the fairway. So this isn't, again, as I say, it's more of a linksy style feel. The fairways, you know, are quite wide in places, and you'll be fine. But if you're ending up over there, you deserve the punishment that you're getting. Like, you're basically going off track completely.
Rory's driver hasn't been great this year, has it?
No, and again, even if you look at the Masters, he probably wasn't at his best, but just found a way. It's just here that
the punishment is
if it was really bad. So, and if you're not being able to get back into position for your approach shots.
You haven't talked about Rory as a potential winner here.
Oh no, I think Rory's a great win player now. I think it's just the lack of game time. And we just have to get used to this, because the way he's been talking during the week about the new PGA Tour schedule that they're bringing in next year, was, it doesn't really affect me anyways, because I'm going to be playing less and less. I'll sort of turn up when I want to turn up. So, yeah, he hasn't been perfect. He is clearly gearing his entire season around these events and isn't that bothered about winning your average PGA Tour event. He rocks up at them. It's a little bit of practice. You know, he finished 12th at the Memorial, finished 7th at the PGA before that. He finished 19th at the Truist. They're the only three events he's played in since the Masters. So there's not a huge amount to go on, except for we know that he's in a different headspace now. We know these are the only things that matter to him. He wants to win lots of everything. So, yeah, I don't think the conditions are going to be a massive issue for McIlroy. He's sort of shown now he can play in any sort of condition, whatever game is needed. He's not as reliant on his driver. Like, that's been the biggest transformation of McIlroy, whereas, what was it, 60-70% of his strokes gained at one stage 10 years ago were with his driver. Now it's an even split between approach, between putting and everything. So he has it all. And no, I wouldn't be at all shocked if Rory was right there.
Okay. Anybody else that you think we need to pay attention to?
Like Ram, if he's been there and he's taken this seriously, and he definitely seems to have got out of the funk that he was in last year. Xander Schauffele, I always like at majors. Tommy Fleetwood's having a really good season. There's still question marks probably about his ability to seal the deal, and maybe he's thinking about next month and the Open on home soil as his real priority. Matt Fitzpatrick's had a good year and showed a bit of form again last week. So knows how to win this type of tournament. I like JJ Spawn, who's the defending champion. Obviously, Brooks defended here. He's having a really good year as well, and I think probably at a slightly bigger price than some of those guys, can put himself in the mix. Shane Lowry's had a really, really difficult season, so it's hard to sit here and, you know, he's never really got over the Cognizant and the collapse there and the way it ended for him. But, and this is the old stereotype that he sort of goes against himself at times, tough conditions, he loves them. Sure, he grew up in that.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I like the sun and the warmth and the heat and knowing exactly where my ball is going to end up.
Yeah. The annoying thing with Shane, though, is that he kind of has to play himself out of these funks. And that's a vicious circle of, he's not going to play well until he plays well, and then he'll play well again. But if
no better place
well,
to do it than Shinnecock this weekend. DB is standing by to talk to us about Mayo and Meath and the rivalry.
One last one for you.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on him. Maybe not this week, but over the coming weeks, because he's going to be the next world number one. Jackson Coivin. He's the US best amateur in the world right now. He's going to turn pro after this. Superstar in waiting. Maybe like a first round leader, little look at.
Right.
Mayo Meath.
We're just ticking along
nicely.
Back, baby.
Get ourselves to a quarterfinal, semi-final.
See, it's now or never.
On the right
Kobe,
side
though.
Of the draw. See, this is, I was just talking about this with one of my Mayo colleagues of, I think DB, is he there?
Is he?
I don't know if he is.
No, we've got to play a clip first.
I think you'd be excited about Mayo, of what's to come with Andy Moran over the next 3 or 4 years.
If.
Except you keep going, the best of them is leaving. Yeah, so
maybe he'll come back. We'll get DB's response to that in a minute. Nathan, good man. Thank you.